So I was going to ask you, Patrick, about relationships with different sectors of the society in Gibraltar, but let's start with the Gibraltar government. It wasn't there in that point, was it, really?
Well, at that stage, there was EXCO, the Executive Council, and LegCo, the Legislative Council, and my father obviously sat on the one and was represented on the other. The mayor of Gibraltar was Sir Joshua Hassan, and he was a member of both those. And a number of other prominent Gibraltarians were also members, of course. I remember Mr. Saruya, who was a very successful jeweller, being on EXCO, and there were a number of others whose names I now forget, and they were cooperative, hardworking, and very efficient, and also, I may say, very charming people. They were delightful people to meet. Sir Joshua was particularly good as mayor and first minister. He was instrumental in a lot of the various reforms that went on. Of course, in those days, independence was in the air. We were handing over innumerable territories all over the world. The Union Jack was rattling down, and the colourful local flag was rattling up all over the place. But there was a problem in Gibraltar. Darrell Bates, the colonial secretary, pointed it out that under the Treaty of Utrecht, 300 years ago this year, indeed, in 1713, Gibraltar was ours until such time as we got bored of it and didn't want it anymore. And in those days, of course, in the early 1700s, there wasn't much will of the people being taken into consideration amongst the leaders of the world. So the idea that one could have a referendum and all Gibraltarians say they wish to remain British, even though the British said that they no longer wanted to run the place, was an impossibility to them. And there was this problem that it would revert to Spain. So that had to be obviously avoided at all costs, because it's the one thing the Gibraltarians did not wish. They wished to remain connected to England. So there was this delicate problem, which the Foreign Office were actually rather bored with. I think they at that time would far rather have got shot of the whole problem, because it caused so much aggro with the Spaniards. But my father was determined it should not be. One of the things that did occur was the British Army said they wished to withdraw their infantry battalion from Gibraltar, leaving Gibraltar in the hands simply of the Gibraltarian Regiment, who were a territorial army unit, not a standing unit at all. And it was quite clear to my father that this would be seen by the Spaniards as a lack of interest by the British and an opening for the Spaniards to press the Gibraltarians extremely hard. And he took an extremely firm line on that. He came back and drew on a number of his friends in this country and at least postponed that from happening by 10 or 15 years, which was a satisfactory arrangement, because by then the European Union had come in and there was a number of changes which would have prevented Spain from putting that sort of pressure on Gibraltar. But by and large, the Gibraltarians, realising that there was this problem, wished to remain very close to the British in everything that went on in EXCO and LegCo, and this worked very well. We did all wish to increase the prosperity of Gibraltar, quite apart from the entrepôt trade, which as a tax-free haven was good and was providing a good living for them. But we could see that might well be threatened at some time, and that we should try and encourage tourism there in Gibraltar.
Thank you. That was very succinct. Thank you very much. That was excellent. I was going to talk about the relationship between the sort of British and the Gibraltarians. You know, I suppose there's two sectors, isn't there? Because there's the civilian British and the military British. And lots of different people.
Yes. I think that the military British, being used to going to abroad from England, were only too delighted to be in Gibraltar because it was a delightful place to be, with the sailing and the swimming and the opportunities to visit southern Spain. The civilians who were there, I think, were only too delighted to be out of England. I don't know if anyone remembering England in the 1950s. It was the late 50s. It was not a wildly pleasant place to live. We'd only really just got shaking off the problem of the war, and beginning to have a little prosperity there. The buildings were filthy. There were even bomb sites still in London. It was a very pleasant thing to go to Gibraltar. This was a time when television was somewhat in its infancy, and the cultural side within Gibraltar needed a hand. The excellent St. Michael's Caves in the middle of the rock itself, which were lovely stalactites and stalagmites caves, being a limestone rock, of course, it produced extraordinary exhibition of them there.
Like sort of Somerset Caves, similar thing.
They were lit for tourists to come around and see. And also, it was found that the acoustics were not half bad, and people used to hold concerts there, and it was great fun to have a concert in the caves. So that was there.
And actually, that brings us a bit to the tunnels, doesn't it? Because
yes.
You had a good tour of the tunnels, which must have an awful lot of that infrastructure of tunnels after this to be made in the Second World War. I mean, there were some made years and years before that, but maybe you could just talk a little bit about that.
Yes, the tunnels, Gibraltar without the tunnels would be an egg without salt. You're quite right, they were the most amazing pattern of tunnels going through. There were, of course, the ones on the north face of the rock, which had been cut there during the siege for the guns to bear onto the Spanish lines. And they were very difficult to get to, but if you did have a tour there, and it was a hard-hat tour, as you can imagine, that produced the most fantastic view from up there. And they were an amazing engineering feat, particularly considering when they were cut. The more modern ones had been cut during the Second World War, and there was a Fortress Engineer Regiment there who were very much engaged in tunnelling anyway. They had a lot of tunnellers there on strength. And there was a huge network of tunnels within the rock itself. There were those who said they were surprised the place stood. And in there were a capacity for a complete hospital. There were innumerable magazines for explosives, and I understand that after the war, getting explosives out was quite a thing. A mass of torpedoes and depth charges and things like that, which had been held obviously for the Royal Naval Dockyard, it was an amazing network of tunnels, not entirely comprehensive in that they had tended to tunnel where they could, and It meant that you could easily get lost there, I had the feeling, and driving in a little jeep through the middle of the tunnels was an amazing experience, going round hairpin bends and coming upon low sections and then vastly high sections. It was quite a remarkable experience, really.
How extraordinary. So you're driving right up to the top of the rock and driving to, you know.
Amazing feeling, really, yes.
Amazing engineering.
Outside, of course, the road to the top of the rock could be driven past the ape station for the apes that were on strength, not the wild ape station, which is a little further down. And there, the ape sergeant, who was to be looking after them, he was looking after the Barbary apes there, and keeping them in order and making sure they were fit and well, and also earmarking the ones who might be sent off to various zoos who kept asking for specimens of Barbary apes to come along and join them. I think he used to get rid of the badly behaved ones, probably, when he was asked to get rid of them.
The ones that threw fruit at people. Yeah.
And bit them and things like that, yeah. And stole their cameras. Yes, that yes. sort of thing. But there was a road that went right to the top of the rock, and there you did have a most amazing view. It had a number of radar things on, which you do well to step aside from, because they were very powerful. But they themselves were remarkable, because goodness knows what they did in a defence configuration, but certainly when the birds passed Gibraltar on their migratory flights down to Africa and back, the picture that you got on those radars, which were very sensitive, was absolutely amazing. Literally millions of birds swirling past the rock, clearly using the rock as a navigational spot on their way south or north. And the most amazing birds used to settle occasionally when they were tired, have a quick rest, on their way past.
That's really fantastic. I heard somebody talking about that. I mean, again, you know, this is something that people are now conscious of and wanting to protect, you know, because there's been a really, you know, they've just ignored all the wildlife and a lot of this sort of thing lately, but, you know, now it's coming back. I mean, I think this is great. We've nearly finished, really. But I just wanted to ask you about two things, really. First of all, about what, I mean, obviously, you know, in the convent and in your family, you must have spoken English. But was there Spanish spoken as well there? Can you remember?
I think there was a certain amount of Spanish spoken among Gibraltarians who had either married into the Spaniards had married into their family, or had perhaps lived in Spain for a while. But by and large, English, they were proud of their English. Their English was very correct. You could not tell a Gibraltarian from an Englishman when they spoke. They had good schools, and they wished to learn English. For the same reason that people do now, that it's a worldwide language, and they realise the advantages of being able to do so. One or two Gibraltarians did go and live in Spain. We paid a visit to Mr. Bacarices, who was a distinguished Spanish painter, artist, and who lived in Seville. And he had been given honorary Spanish nationality as well, because of his artistic talent, and he was an example of Gibraltarian, went to live abroad, went to live in Spain. But other than that, by and large, Gibraltarians like to go back to the rock, and I can see why.
And have you been back apart from your honeymoon?
Sadly not. We were talking about it, actually, when you kind enough to suggest I made this oral talk, this little talk. Yes, I would like to go back, actually, and visit very much. Yes.
And when you look back now at, you know, from distance of time, really, what is your enduring memory of Gibraltar, do you think?
I think it's staunch loyalty to Britain. They were British to the core. They rarely treasured their British nationality in a way that perhaps people who live in this country don't realise what a valuable thing it is.